12 days of mass demonstrations force Ecuador's government to reinstate fuel subsidies. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. 2 weeks ago, Ecuador's president scrapped fuel subsidies as part of an International Monetary Fund loan program aimed at shoring up the struggling economy. But as gas prices soared, protests by indigenous people brought the capital, Quito, to a standstill. Violence even forced the government to relocate its offices to a port city 400 miles away. The BBC's Matthias Zabel is in Ecuador. He explains what fueled the government's reversal.
It was the scale of the protest, the level of violence that forced the government to declare the state of emergency and then a curfew forced the government as well. The conversations today between the president and indigenous leader was taking place in Quito. And we can imagine that now with this agreement, he will move the whole administration back to the capital city and the indigenous groups compromise to leave the capital city and go back to the rural areas. I'm pretty sure the IMF will have a close eyes in the new decree. Remember now, the negotiations are not over. People need things to go back to normal, especially people in the capital city. They are really fed up with the protests.
Matthias Zabel reporting from Ecuador there. Let's do the numbers. China's Shanghai Composite Index rose more than 1% today after the U.S. and China last week agreed a limited trade deal. The British pound is down about 0.5% today after weekend Brexit talks saw no major breakthrough. Queen Elizabeth will take center stage in Parliament later this morning as she gives a traditional Queen's speech. It sets the legislative agenda for the new session. Her remarks, written by the government, will also detail some plans for a post-Brexit Britain. After pulling plans for a stock market debut last month, office-sharing startup WeWork is trying to avoid a cash crunch, and its biggest investor, SoftBank, is reported to be trying to take control of the company. The BBC's Andrew Wood explains why.
SoftBank owns about a third of WeWork already. If it can push it over 50%, it gets control. I think SoftBank thinks that perhaps WeWork has a good business idea. It's sustainable in the long run. And this might be actually quite a cheap way to get control of a rather promising company, which is hitting difficult times at the moment.
So it doesn't feel like it's been burned by the bad publicity surrounding the scuppered IPO earlier this year.
Well, perhaps the exact opposite. It's taking advantage of the bad publicity over the abandoned IPO because other people might not want to lend or invest in WeWork at the moment after it went from being this supposed $47 billion company to about a $10 or $12 billion company. And don't forget, one of the founders of WeWork, Adam Neumann, he was basically pushed aside. He originally had control of WeWork. He controlled most of the shares.
Now, SoftBank isn't the only one interested in giving WeWork a hand. JPMorgan Chase is also said to have been tapped to help raise millions of dollars too.
Yes, and there's talk about a lot of investors, smaller investors, perhaps a couple of dozen of them, putting in small amounts as well. I mean, it's a sign that WeWork isn't totally dead and hasn't been totally destroyed by the publicity, and it's going to be some competition for SoftBank, I suppose.
The BBC's Andrew Wood in Hong Kong. Thank you.
Thanks.
Directors of WeWork's parent company are said to meet as early as today to decide on one of those financing packages. Though India this month scrapped plans to impose a ban on single-use plastics, the country is still working toward environmental targets. The country's finance minister outlined tax incentives for electric vehicle purchases, but as the BBC's Zoe Thomas reports, there are still major challenges ahead.
This Hyundai factory in southern India produces a petrol-burning car every 33 seconds. But in the plant next door, there is a far slower pace. In here, workers are finishing the newest addition to Hyundai's India lineup, the Kona Electric, by hand. Lower demand for electric vehicles means the company only needs to build a few each day.
For any kind of a niche segment market, we always use this line.
That's S. Ganesh Mani, director of manufacturing at Hyundai Motors India. He says cost is still a major hurdle.
Electric vehicle per se, the major most cost comes from the battery. And that battery costs close to 50% of the cost minimum. The EV is actually a latest technology. Initial cost would always be higher.
As demand grows, car makers expect that cost will drop. In the meantime, India's chief finance minister, Nirmala Sitharaman, announced tax breaks to make electric vehicles more affordable.
Government has already moved to lower the GST rate on electric vehicles from 12 to 5%.
It wants them to make up a third of all passenger vehicle sales by 2030. But today, less than 1% of Indian customers are choosing to buy them. 5 years ago, Farah Halim's husband talked her into buying an electric car.
I thought he was crazy.
The couple fell in love with their Mahindra E2O. But Farah's husband, Rafa, says they ran into a common problem, a lack of charging points.
The biggest fear in our mind was range anxiety. What happens if you run out of charge and it's going to run only 100 kilometers per charge? A normal petrol car of a similar size would go 400 to 800 kilometers on a full tank.
There are just 150 public charging points across India. Until that changes and costs drop, India's ambitious electric dreams will remain off in the distance. In Chennai, I'm the BBC's Zoe Thomas for Marketplace.
Finally, you can rent homes, cars, clothing, office space, why not Legos? At a press conference in London, the company's vice president of sustainability said he was, quote, totally open to the concept of product rentals. But he said there are technical barriers, like, for example, whether all those teeny tiny plastic bricks would actually make it back in the box once they'd been dumped out and played with. Anyone who's ever stepped on a rogue Lego will probably know that pain. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.